We're beginning the first chapter of the Gate of Hatred, page Shin Chafei. Hasina, hatred. Himida ha'ad me'od. It is a horrible trait. As the verse says in Proverbs, V'nirgan mafrid aluf. He who causes hatred will cause to distance aluf, which according to some commentaries is a reference to God. Me'oreret midanim benachim. Hatred can cause enmity between brothers. The word ach in Hebrew means connection. But to connect two pieces is called le'achot, to connect. So the word ach is supposed to connote connection. And here that's the stress. Even between brothers, hatred can arouse enmity. Ki im tisna et adam yira beinecha kol ma'asav. If one hates, then everything the person does is bad in one's eyes. You ever notice that? We go all out. If we hate him, then there's nothing he can do right. Okay, the great pacifist. The Magen Midovna says, so long as there's hatred in the world, you will not find tranquility in the world. The root of wars, the root of racism, the root of the turbulence which hinders our lives is hatred. And it doesn't matter if it's the Zulu tribe or it's the white supremacists. Ke'omer Rabotenu Zichonam Livracha, as our sages said at the very end of Shas, in the last tractate of Shas, at the end of that last tractate, Lo matza HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kli Machzik Bracha LiYisrael Ela Shalom. God could not find, so to speak, a vessel that will house blessing for Israel other than peace. The vessel through which God gives blessing to Israel is called peace. And about this, the prophet Isaiah prayed to God and said, God, you should pour upon us peace. We beg you, place upon us peace. So, the first paragraph, he began by saying hatred is a terrible trait. It arouses enmity even between those that would be close. And when one hates, then everything one sees is tainted and seems bad. Now, this has huge relevance. Now, the Medrash, similar stories quoted in Talmud, the Medrash says, there was once a drought, and as much as they prayed, they couldn't get rain to come down. And then there was one man whose ex, his divorcee, was in need of assistance, and he went out and assisted her, even though things were very expensive, and it was beyond his responsibility after the divorce. And he went above and beyond the call of duty to help her out. And the sages saw in that the turning point where prayers began being accepted, and God saw that, and God caused it to rain. So the sages said, that's there, you have something where you had a massive explosion, and it's natural that there's ill feelings between the two, and suddenly he can look positively, go beyond the call of duty, and that changes the fortune of the whole society. Okay, so we want to understand hatred. We think we understand hatred. The Magen Midovna, as always, is going to develop it. Umtziuta be'etzem v'rishona ben chayot hayar. You want to know where you first find hatred? Between the wild animals of the forest. Again, I wouldn't have said that. Let's hear. Ki betivam umizgam nita'at ha'sin'a lisnoz etze. Because animals have a nature to hate one another. Litrof teref. To devour one another, to consume, to destroy. And certainly they hate man. I don't know what he's talking about, in all honesty. I didn't know the lion hates the lamb. I thought the lion's hungry, so he eats the lamb. I don't know what he means. He
flies, says, flies. I agree with him on flies, actually.
Flies hate us, yeah, okay. I don't know. I know we hate them. I didn't know they hate us.
Ve'etzlami echechit.
So we have one of two choices. We can understand hatred as a thought out process, but it could be that he's indicating to us that hatred is reflected in action. Hatred is not only a question of what do I think of him? So go interview Leo the lion, and Leo the lion will tell you, I don't hate the sheep, I'm just hungry. So it could be that what he's trying to teach us is that at the most basic level, hatred is measured by action. So a question was asked earlier tonight, what if a person says he hates all Jews, and then he himself discovers he's a Jew? So we don't only measure a person based on attitude, we also measure based on action. And this is a very pivotal point in a lot of Jewish sources. You can't just say, in my heart, I'm a good Jew. It's important to be a good Jew in heart. But it's a question of what do you do in action? I could give you many stories, but I think the idea is understood without stories. Yeah?
Is he necessarily talking about the animals of the jungle?
Or what?
The animals of the jungle. Lion, nations, people.
Oh, no, he's talking about the animals. He's saying there's that the actions of the animals, it's not personal. The animal doesn't have a thought, oh, I hate that sheep. But the fact that the lion is willing to devour the sheep because he's hungry, he's calling that hatred. So he's defining the term hatred different than we would define it. We take hatred as, I think about him, I don't like him, so I'm going to eat him. No, if I'm willing to eat him because I'm hungry, that, he says, is hatred. And if you think about it, he's really teaching us a lot in that. Because let's work differently. Let's take the following scenario, okay? You're in line for supper. And you see, from your vantage point in line, there isn't going to be enough. So now, a person can have two modes of thought. A person can think the way most people do, the way I think every person instinctively does. There isn't going to be enough for everyone, so I better make sure there's enough for me. But a person can also think and ask himself, how hungry am I? There are people around me who are more hungry than me. Do I really need that tonight? I had a good lunch. I wasn't even sure if I'd come down to supper. How many times do we come down to supper and you weren't even sure if you were hungry? But when you suddenly realize there isn't enough, I do this with my kids all the time. I take out and I say, last piece of toast. Everyone wants it. It's the last piece of toast. Guess what? I discovered another one. Everyone wants it. Suddenly they're all eating a massive supper. Okay, when I feel like there isn't enough for everyone, so I want it. You want it? Fine, eat it. But that's our nature. You see it in the stores where people cut one another off. You see it on the highway. You see it when people are driving. There's a certain nature where I told you guys, I think I once wrote a song about the cycles that go on in the world. There's a... Let's see if I can remember the song. Okay. I'll quote the part that's relevant to us, okay? Can't remember. Okay, in a nutshell, the song describes how there are cycles that go on in the world. And one of the cycles is that organisms are constantly consuming one another. The bird in the air hunts the vulture in the air will go after those creatures which are struggling on the ground. And we look at the world as a dog-eat-dog world. Is it really? Or do we become dogs in order to be more competitive, to ensure that I'm the dog that eats the other dog, but I've made myself into a dog? Whereas if I'm going to elevate myself, then it's not about a dog-eat-dog world. It's about a human being helping a human being. Let's see how we can move the world forward. Totally different concept. So I think that's where he's developing the idea of hatred. It's not what we call hatred. It's not premeditated, I hate him. It's, if he's going to be my supper, so he's going to be my supper. Yeah?
So if there is a correlation between two things and two aspects of everything, like hate and love, for example, then love would also be defined through action. If hate is defined through action by pushing your way through the line or whatever, then love would be defined by letting people go first or the actions that you also have.
That's a good point. Let's see what he writes. Here? I'm not sure we'll find it so fast, but let's try. It's on page Kuf Samach Gimel. Kuf Samach, not Gimel, Kuf Samach Zayin. See, it's interesting. He does. In Ahava, he also discussed that there are two extremities. There's Ahava and Sina. And they define how a person behaves. In Ahava, he developed it a little bit differently, but also he took Ahava to what we might call a very simplistic level. He described how the ahava, what we love or what we like, defines our behavior. And then, technically, you think we think things through. No, it's what we want. It's our desires. It's what we love that defines what we pursue. But I have to look. I don't want to do it at your expense right now. I have to look. It's a good point. I have to look through the correlation. I think over there he went to the opposite extreme, where if over here he's starting from the animals, over there he started from God. Meaning, with regard to hatred, he's describing where animals hate, etc., and where man evolves. And with love, he described the love of Hashem and where how we can take that and apply that in other areas of our life. But I hear what you're saying. We have to look. I don't know. You could look it up. Tell me what you find. Page Kuf Samach Zayin. Yeah. I'm sorry, were you first? Okay, yeah.
The lion eating the lamb. You know, I've had chicken before. I don't hate my chicken.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hungry, I eat the chicken.
That's a great question. Maybe right after we finish this, we'll address that, okay? Yeah.
Maybe he means like not the, like, I don't know, I imagine like two dogs getting into a fight over something, just or anything, that, you know, one growls at another. Just have a natural animosity for each other. They feel all of the dogs threaten them or something. Like, maybe that's what's being described, and not just found that the lion sees something and wants to eat it. But lions eat meat. What's it gonna, like, its whole characteristic is that it requires it to live. So at what point is the, how could a lion not, yeah, it's like very, is that a possible interpretation? But even,
I don't think so. If you look at the words, I don't think that fits with the words.
My other question is, do we have to accept this definition?
I don't think so.
God told Moses, this is the definition.
No. I don't think so. This is a book of Jewish thought. The Magen Midvanah was a big Talmud Chacham who put together much of the works that preceded him, but there's a lot of originality in his presentation for sure. So let's see.
This seems to be conflating selfishness with hatred.
Let's see. I hear what you're saying. Let's see. Let's see. He's got 13 chapters, I think, on this. Let's hear him out. He says, even though man has the capacity to hate, but the human hatred and the animalistic hatred stem from the same place. He says on Parshas Bereishis, in his commentary on the Chumash, he actually went into this. Man was granted strengths and traits where those traits, those attributes, those strengths are really the unification of all the strengths of the planet in one place. Meaning what man is he takes in the different strengths that exist around him, the strengths of the plants and the strengths of the animals, and everything unites within man, and then man has the choice, how will he apply them? That's why man is called, in Midrashic or Kabbalistic texts, a miniature world, because man, to a certain degree, encompasses what's around him. It's just interesting, because the Kabbalists apply this in many different concepts, and when you look at the Medrash that actually discusses it, the Medrash sounds rather simplistic. The Medrash says there are streams on the planet, there are streams within man, the different fluids that flow. The Medrash, when read simply, the Medrash doesn't seem to take us to Kabbalistic concepts. The Medrash just seems to show a certain correlation. The Medrash says, you have salty waters, so too within the human there are salty waters. You have sweet waters, so too within the human there are sweet waters. The different fluids that come out of the body have different flavors. They have different temperatures. They have different components. So, yes, we have all kinds of fluids coming out of us, just like on planet Earth, there are all kinds of fluids. Some seas have sweet water, some have salty water, some, etc. The Medrash is in Avos de Rabbi Nosson, I think the 31st chapter. They write over here, it's the 31st, the third Brisa. If I remember correctly, it's split up over more than one Brisa, but it's chapter 31:3. That's the source they quote. V'anachnu muslim omdim pe hanavi alav shalom. Now, we have a forecast. The prophet has told us that in the future, v'gal ze'ev im keves, the wolf will live peacefully with the sheep, and a leopard will sit and graze together with the goat. You're going to have a lion sitting next to a calf and next to a fattened animal that's been fattened up for the kill. And a little child will be able to lead all of them. And the cow, together with the bear, will graze. They will let their children graze together. And the lion will eat hay like the cattle. You'll see a young baby playing by the hole of a python, and a young baby will extend his hand over a very poisonous snake called the tzifoni. These animals will not harm, they will not destroy on my holy mountain, because land will be filled with the knowledge of Hashem just as the waters cover the sea. So we have a promise. This is still coming. We learned this prophecy. Just a second, let's just finish the paragraph. And then we will be able to live in confidence, nothing bad will happen. You will no longer have hatred on planet Earth. That, says the Magen Midovna, is the prophecy. So long as there is hatred, so the wolf devours the sheep, the leopard devours the goat, the lion devours the calf, the young child is endangered by the python, etc. Chuvah ba'olam. So there's destruction, as the verse says. Chalak liba matay yashamu. Being that their hearts are divided, that's why they're being destroyed, that's why they're falling. So divisiveness stems from hatred. Hatred is the root of war, of destruction, of divisiveness. That's the thought that he's developing here. And he's describing hatred. You said it's a... What was the term used? Selfishness. That's the interpretation we suggested. And maybe we'll just finish the chapter and then we'll get the questions. Can I wait till then? So just finish the chapter. He concludes and says, And our sages, Rabbeinu Zal, b'mlitzatam azakam, who our sages said, "Hamgadel kelev ra betoch beito." If someone brings up an evil dog in his house, so there's a big sign at the entrance that says, "Beware of dog, he bites more than once." And people don't enter his house. So people don't come. Very interesting. I got an email two nights ago. I get an email that someone posted that they're moving. They want to get rid of all their English books. Anyone who wants can come and get the crates from next to their house. Please call in advance so they can take Sasha in and he won't bite you when he comes to take the books. So I thought it might be a good idea to get more books for our library here. Someone's giving away English books. They have Art Scroll books. But I wasn't sure I wanted to put up with Sasha, you know. Never met him. Sasha was the dog, yeah.
It's not their child or something.
They didn't write. I assumed it was the dog, right? I don't know. I didn't go to find out. So they said, call, we'll bring him in, okay? So the Talmud says it's a play on words. Shnemar lamas mereu chased, sheken mishon gvanim kurim lechedev lamas. The verse says, "Lamas mereo chased," he who taxes, who takes away kindness from his friend. Now, in Greek, the word "lamas" means dog. Have anyone here who speaks Greek? No. Okay. What?
Nine.
Okay. "Ramaz al magid etzmo lisnot abriot kakelav ra kofetz mul pnei kol pogea bo." So the Talmud was alluding to this idea that there's this evil dog that he jumps at anyone who comes within reach. Our sages say, and here he gives us a new insight to the Talmud, that when one has an evil dog, he's preventing the kindness from above from entering his home. It's not that he is prevented from doing kindness unto others, but that from above, whatever kindness they wanted to impart on him is being limited, is being hindered because he has the evil dog. A person that has an evil dog should realize that from above, they can't give him what they'd like to give him. He doesn't have pity on other people, so from heaven they don't have pity on him. When a person is merciful to others, so from heaven they're merciful to him. Other sages said further, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak amar, af poek mimenu yirat shamayim. A person that has such a dog also removes the fear of heaven, as the verse says, v'yirat shakai yazov, ki ra'onav u'machshavotam nim zam ve'evrach o'shimra la'briyot. Why does a person bring up such a dog? What's he thinking? When a person is thinking about the harm he can inflict, the strength his dog has, the capacity his dog has to do evil things, and if you think back, it's very interesting. One of the hallmarks of the Nazis was their pit bull. You know, you always see that. So he's saying when a person has an evil dog, there's something to it. And it means he's investing his thought and he's investing his efforts in bringing up and taking care of something that's there to harm other people. So he's not describing a situation where a person needs a dog to protect his home, etc. He's saying in general, under normal circumstances, why does a person invest such efforts to bring up an evil dog? That's what Chazal were talking about, that the one who invests his efforts in a dog that's evil, well, he's investing in evil, and then that's, according to one step of the Talmud, he's removing kindness from his home. According to another opinion in Talmud, he's removing the fear of heaven from upon him. But at any rate, this goes back to the idea he began with, that the root of all evils in one's personality is hatred. And hatred is first found in that tendency to devour others for one's own gain, as we find in the animals. And that same trait can be found in humans. That, he says, is hatred. And he says hatred has the capacity to taint anything that's done. You guys have probably seen this, where sometimes someone tries to do something good for the other party, and they interpret it for bad. Whatever they do, they interpret it for bad, because there's this tremendous hatred inside them. And then it limits the other party, because Even if you try to do it right, it's going to be interpreted wrong. You see this sometimes between mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law. You know, the mother-in-law will say, "You dress so nicely today." So they walk away, and the son will tell his wife, he said, "Didn't my mother speak nicely to you?" So she said, "You don't know anything." She says, "What'd she say?" "Right, today." "She said today, meaning yesterday I wasn't dressed nicely." "Are you sure that's what she meant?" "Of course that's what she meant. Why'd she say it if that's not what she meant?" Right? If you come the next time, you warn your mother, you walk in, and she says, "Wow, you're dressed beautifully." So you walk away, and she did it again. He said, "What'd she do? She didn't say today." She said, "I know. But she said it in a way that she was saying, she's going to tell me when I'm dressed nicely and when not. Who is she? Why is she giving me grades? She's going to tell me if I dress nicely or not." Okay, come back the third time. Tell mom, "Don't say a word about how she dresses, okay? Come in, it's so nice to see you, everything's great." You walk away, you see she hates me. "What'd she do this time? Come on." And you see she didn't say anything about how I dress, right? "But last time you said, you don't understand anything," right? So, when there's hatred, then everything can be interpreted for bad. And we see it. We see it. Unfortunately, we see it. There's a, this is a recurring theme in people's lives, and it prevents people from ever making headway in certain relationships in their lives. Sometimes it's a question of shalom bias, where a couple has such ill feelings to one another. What can you do to make it right? It's no different than the mother-in-law. But the mother-in-law, okay, try to get him to be civil, and that's the best you might be able to do. But with one's own spouse, sometimes with one's own child, sometimes between children, we have to recognize the root that's so destructive within every person. And then, Be'ez Hashem, we'll learn also how to deal with it. The next chapter will deal with the question of where does hatred actually come from? And he'll describe that there are two real sources, two primary sources for hatred.